right, both sides ready?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, if you call the case, we'll get started.
Court will now call James David Robertson Jr. versus the state detective. May it please the court, Mr. Thomas Papa will argue for the appellant. Ms. Catherine Luck will argue for the state.
Hey, Tom.
Yes, Your Honor, the case is actually, I may regret saying this to the court in light of the previous cases I've observed and the court's excellent ability to ask questions, but the case is a pretty straightforward legal sufficiency on a DWI case, and it goes to the issue of whether or not the state's proof concerning the appellant was the operator of the motor vehicle was sufficient.
So the only evidence was he was near the car, and the officer didn't remember whether he saw him get out on the driver's side, but had testified earlier that he had, and that's...
Actually, it's more... I already regret saying it was simple, Your Honor. It's a little more convoluted than that. The basic, I think, thrust of the state's brief is twofold. Number one was that... he saw the defendant get out of the car, and that's what he said in his offense report. But his testimony, he contradicted that, and I've marked some places in the record in addition to what's in the brief that I will just briefly read to the court because they give a better feel than the actual, than I think the references do. And the second thing was that he saw the car move while the female, who later testified that she was always the driver, not the appellant, that while the female was walking. And his testimony on that is a bit muddled, but if I may address those two things, those
Please.
Are really the two proofs. And I want to go one step further just before I answer the court's question. As the court knows, Jackson versus Virginia is really has three different standards. One is no evidence, one is a mere modicum, and then the third one is the evidence conclusively establishes a reasonable doubt. I don't think that the police report reference rises to the level of evidence, but I'm going to leave the no evidence standard alone just for purposes of presenting this to the court. So I'm going to talk first about the mere modicum, and that's exactly what the officer's reference in the offense report, which was contradicted by his testimony, is, and the reference to the car moving while the female was walking. So I've just made a couple references, and I'm looking at page 74 in the record, or actually page 73. The first reference, and this is during cross-examination of Officer Putnam, who was the arresting officer and the main witness against appellant, says, okay, now you've told us that you did not see David get out of the car, correct? David's the defendant appellant. Not that I recall. That's the first time he's asked. Of course, like any defense lawyer on trying to do trial work, we ask the same question, you know, repeatedly, even though the judges get mad at us. He says, okay, not that I recall. I'm looking at page 74 in the record. But you put it in your report that you did, didn't you? And he says, well, yeah, I remember putting it in my report that I observed him. But again, that's just based on my memory at the time. Okay? And they go down to the bottom of the page. It says, isn't it true that you reported that you personally observed James get out of the driver's side of the vehicle? Yes, that's what the report says. And you go to the bottom of page 75. You go down a little bit further, and you say, okay, were you mistaken when you put that in your report? Were you mistaken when you did that? And he said, I wouldn't say mistaken, but that's then when it's fresh, and that's what I remember, yes. And then he's asked, well, look, you swore under oath three different places you didn't see him get out of the driver's side of the vehicle. Are you telling us that maybe you did and put it in your report and you just remember it different now? And he says, again, based on my memory, I don't. And he's asked very specifically, well, what you remembered is that you didn't see him get out of the vehicle, right? That's correct. And that's what you remember today, correct. So you're telling these juries you remembered something different? Well, based on, yes, like I say, when I was writing my report, and you go to the bottom of page 76, he says, and you're testifying here today, you didn't observe him get out of the vehicle, right? Correct. So his sworn testimony is that he didn't observe him get out of the vehicle. And I think, you know, we can argue what modicum really is, and I think that's sort of the thrust of this case, what it means. But I think this is a perfect example that demonstrates what modicum means. They have some reference in his report that he says maybe he remembered at the time when he did it because it was fresher in his memory, but he's refreshed his memory from his report, and he testifies under oath. And maybe I'm old-fashioned. Oath means sworn testimony. And that should be given weight, greater weight. And his sworn testimony wasn't, I don't remember now, or I'm not sure now, or all the different qualifiers, and that's discussed and argued in the trial. He says, no, I did not see him get out of the car. So I think it's very clear that testimony shows that there isn't the evidence that he was in the car. And then he's asked, the time you saw the vehicle in motion, a female was not in the vehicle? Correct. Okay. But he's asked other questions about the female, and it's clear that his testimony is as muddled, for lack of a better word, on this issue concerning when he saw the female or a female outside the moving vehicle as he is about whether or not he saw the defendant get out of the vehicle when he clearly didn't. Says, okay, did you make contact with the female? No. And you actually sent another officer to go make contact? Yes. So you actually saw a vehicle in motion? Yes, I did. And at the time you saw the vehicle in motion, the female was not in the vehicle? That's correct. So then we go over, you know, back and forth in trial, and I'm looking at page 102 in the record. Okay, when you testify here today about your recollections, your recollection is now, is it better now or better then? Well, typically it's better at the time than it's first, when it's first in my mind.
Was the car towed?
Yes, it was, Your Honor.
Was there any evidence that anybody was in the car other than the two people?
There was, Your Honor, and that really goes to the other basis of my argument, which is even if you don't believe that this is a modicum, that it's more than a modicum, this reference in the report, to establish that he was the operator of the vehicle at some point, there was testimony which was uncontested by his wife that she drove the vehicle, number one, and number two, that when she called her brother, who's an attorney, he said something to her. That didn't get in because it's hearsay, but she then goes back, and she testified, she pointed out to the officer that was with her, which the state didn't call to rebut, that in fact the seat was moved up so far that the defendant couldn't have been behind the wheel, and that proves that she was telling the truth when she said she was the only one operating the vehicle.
Well, who was in the car besides the husband, the wife, a husband and the wife? You said there was somebody else in the car?
No.
Well, and the car was moving while she was out walking?
Well, that was the officer's implication. I'm not sure that implication really rises to the level of proof. He couldn't say that the husband was in the car when the car was moving. He couldn't say who was or wasn't in the car when the car was moving. He said he saw a female outside the car when the car was moving, but he said that occurred at different times in different places in his testimony. So he's not clear when he says that. I think this goes to the court's question. The defense brought another witness, and this was a fellow named Risto, and it's in the record, R-I-S-T-O-W. And this also goes, I think, to where the defense conclusively established established a reasonable doubt in this case. Risto was the place whose house the couple had been at. That was his testimony. And he testified there was an argument. The husband didn't want to go home. The wife said, I'm done. We're going home because the husband had been drinking. They get in the car. The wife gets behind the wheel. The husband gets in the passenger side, and they drive off. And they're no more than a mile or a half a mile from the place and 5 minutes from the place where the vehicle is stopped, where the vehicle is located after both occupants are not in the vehicle. So There is testimony from a third party, and again, that testimony's not rebutted. The only effort to rebut that was some effort on cross to say, well, this Risto fellow's a longtime friend of the defendant's. But he testified that there were two people in the car when it drove off. The wife was behind the wheel. Evidence was his testimony established that that was a very short distance and a very short time from the location where the officer observed the vehicle and effected the arrest of the defendant. So both of those things certainly affirmatively establish reasonable doubt. And they're unrebutted. There's no evidence challenging any of that. So whether you look at the either prong of the, or either side of the Jackson standard, either the second two of the three Jackson standards, the evidence here is only a mere modicum. And even if you think it goes beyond that, maybe just barely, and I don't think it does, the defense established, conclusively established a reasonable doubt. And it established it because the testimony of the two witnesses that did that, the wife that said the car's so far up, this fella, my husband, couldn't get behind the wheel. That proves what I'm telling you. And the neighbor that said, yeah, they drove off and I get a phone call and they were arrested, 3 minutes from my house. I'm paraphrasing the testimony, but that's what he says. And that was not rebutted in any way. And so that conclusively establishes and raises reasonable doubt to an element of the offense, a critical element of the offense, operating a motor vehicle. So I think in both examples, both situations, this case should be reversed. I would entertain questions. I'm going to reserve any time. I can reference the court to more examples out of the record, but I think I've caught the specifics for purposes of our argument.
Did the defendant testify?
He did not.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Catherine?
Please, the court, counsel.
Let me say.
Yes.
If this were television, there would be cameras on every single building pointing directly at the car and inside the car to show who was driving. Are y'all falling down up there in Denton and not putting cameras in all your buildings like they have on television?
Your Honor, I believe this was in Plano or Frisco.
Frisco. Well, that explains it.
So Denton's got cameras there.
All right.
One thing I'd like to correct first, I believe the car was not towed from what I remember from the testimony. They actually waited for a friend. The police were very nice and let the wife wait for a friend.
But there was evidence that it was just the husband and wife in the car.
The officer testified that appellant and the woman were the only two people in the area.
Okay.
And also he testified that he saw appellant by the driver's side of the car at both locations where the car was stopped.
He testified he saw him by the driver's door.
By the driver's side, yes,
right.
Your Honor.
Okay. And what was at issue is whether he saw him actually get out of the driver's door.
Right, Your Honor. And right now I'm going to testify, or tell you what he testified to at trial. Also, he saw the car move from one location to the second location, and all the testimony together kind of indicates that while that was happening, while the car was moving, he saw the wife walking down the road away from the vehicle. Then some of the state's best evidence is on State's Exhibit 2, and that's a videotape from the stop. And on that videotape, Officer Putman can be heard telling appellant that he saw him get out of the driver's seat and telling another officer that he saw appellant get out of the driver's seat, then get back into the car and make that turn right there trying to cut her off.
You know, one of the problems with that is courts have repeatedly held that police officers can lie to defendants.
I could see that as far as to the defendant, but he also told another officer that, and I think the jury can make an inference.
Sure.
How far was it from the first time that car stopped to when it was moved?
It was a very short distance. Would you like me to hand? This is state.
Just a couple
just
blocks?
Just a very short distance around a corner.
Okay. Did it move by itself?
Yes, Your Honor.
Did the car drive itself?
We can infer that it was being driven.
By somebody?
Yes, Your Honor.
And there are only two somebodies there?
That's correct, and the woman's walking. Officer Putman testified at trial that the statements that he made on the videotape were accurate. and he testified that one's memory was typically better at the time the events were occurring. He also acknowledged that he may have said at previous hearings that he hadn't seen appellant get into or out of the car. But he qualified that he did not remember. And I've got the motion to suppress hearing here. And he specifically says, I don't recall if I actually saw him get out because I was in the process of getting out myself and turning, and he's standing by the door. And he also, it's over 3 years after the incident when he's testifying at trial. Further, if you listen to the tape, appellant's wife can be heard on the video saying, I don't get why he stopped the car. And in the offense report, as counsel mentioned, Officer Putman stated that he saw appellant get out of the driver's side of the vehicle. And the state submits that a reasonable juror could have found and did, in fact, find that appellant operated the vehicle in this case. And if, unless there are any questions, I'll conclude and ask this court to affirm the decision of the court below.
Is there any rebuttal, Tom?
When you go back and look at these things, especially if you're the attorney that tries the case, you go back and look at the arguments. You know, was did we even touch that in argument? And actually, we did. I made notes of the questions the court had of counsel. A couple things. It was a busy intersection. The record reflects that the officer was not actually at the intersection, but was back some distance from the intersection. That he was working on reports that his car was at an angle and that the intersection was partially obscured. At one point, he testified that he heard an argument and saw the people get out at this four-way stop while the car was stopped at the intersection. At another time in his testimony, he testified that he saw the woman walking and the car pull around the corner and stop, and then he activates and has to exit the parking lot he's in, drive away from the intersection, so his back was turned to the intersection for some, the testimony is not clear, but probably 30 to 50 yards, do a U and then come back towards the intersection. At that time, as he drives up, he sees the defendant standing by the car. The actual distance was a matter of maybe 10 yards. They're stopped at a four-way stop. The vehicle clearly takes a right and stops immediately right there. So it's a very short distance. In terms of the statements, and I think the court caught, you know, that so many things happen at a scene and officers respond, the context of what the officer is saying, both to him and to the other officer in the presence of the defendant, is where the defendant says, I continually denies driving. I wasn't the driver. I didn't do anything. I'm not doing your tests. And so there's an argument. And he says, I know you were the driver. I saw you get out of the car. And so I think that's why courts, appellate courts, are right to be take what is said from a scene with a grain of salt. Sometimes it's helpful, sometimes it's not, and sometimes it doesn't really clear up the issue. In terms of the vehicle moving, and the, it had to be one or the other, that's not clear either, although I think that's probably what the state would, at the trial level, would have had the jurors believe. They argued it. But the officer was unclear in his testimony about when he observed the woman walking. He claims that he observed it when the car was moving the first time, but then he also later claimed that he saw it when the car was pulling around the corner and moving the second time.
Does it matter if the car was moving and she wasn't in it, unless the car was coasting in neutral or something? Does it matter which time, if there were only two people?
Well, I think it matters because it couldn't have been both, the way he testified. And I think the fact that he testified one or the other shows that he's clearly confused, especially given the state of the record concerning his location, his lack of attention, all those other things. And it also, you know, it is late at night, but it's a busy intersection. And there were numerous cars going through the intersection. On the video of the officer, as he's pulling up to the car, you can see other cars at the intersection are going through the intersection. So he refers to it as a white car. So I don't think you get to a place where you can assume as long as she's walking and the car's moving, it must have been him driving. I don't think that gets them, I don't think that's what you can assume from the record. It's not that clear. And his test, the officer's testimony is not that clear. I think the wife's testimony, and it was interesting because this was argued as well, she testified, they got in an argument, she gets out of the car and says, okay, buddy, you drive. I'm saying buddy, I don't know, she may have said something else, but okay, if that's the way you feel about it, you drive. And then she said this happened after they stopped, after she pulled the car up and stopped at the location right around the corner. It's an open field all around there in Frisco. And she said she assumed he was going to, she starts walking across the field, they're only a few blocks from their house. She assumed he was going to drive back to the neighbor's house because he said he didn't want to leave in the first place. And she said she was shocked and amazed when she realized that the car was still there and he hadn't driven back there. So it's not clear, and I don't think either counsel for him or for the state asked her, you know, did you assume that he'd left and come back? Because that clearly didn't happen. I don't think anybody says that happened. And it's apparent that at the time she thought that until, and she makes this somewhat clear from her testimony, until she talks to her brother on the phone and she goes around to the driver's side and looks, opens the door and looks at the seat and it's up right next to the wheel, the driver's wheel. And she said he couldn't have driven and points that out to the other officer. So those statements don't establish sufficiently establish proof beyond a reasonable doubt on that issue. And that's why I think they fit the Jackson standard, a mere modicum. But regardless of that, there just was no challenge to the testimony that established a reasonable doubt in this case.
Questions? No. Do you have any questions? All right. Thank you. We appreciate you coming down here to argue. It was very helpful. And your case is submitted. You're free to go about your business.